You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 972.1S1704, certificate number 10109. The Potsdam Giants.
Beat it, or I'll call the Brute Squad.
I'm on the Brute Squad.
You are the Brute Squad.
The average height of an American CEO in 2005 was 6 foot even.
You know, the average age of a combat soldier in Vietnam was 19.
What was the average height of a combat soldier in Vietnam?
19 feet.
No, 19 feet tall.
19.
Striding over the jungle like Dr. Manhattan. You'd think we would have won.
19 meters tall.
It's just 2.5 inches taller than the American average is the CEO height.
The American average is 5'10", and the CEO is 6 foot.
5'9" and a half, 6 foot, I think.
Yeah. And how tall are you?
I am five. I'm not one of these round uppers. Like I'm 5'10"
and 3/4.
No, probably less. I'm probably 5'10" and a half. And I just say 5'10".
5'10".
Yeah.
You're a round downer.
Yeah. I'm not, I've never understood. I mean, I have 5'10" privilege, which is I'm a perfectly average height and don't have to.
We've talked about this before. You're a perfect medium.
Have you ever, do you know shortish people who have been formed by it? You know, where that's a core element of what made them who they are.
Yeah, I think so. But you know, most of the men, at least I know, who are below the national average, typically have a sense of humor about it, and they kind of have thought about how it's shaped their identity, and they're, I mean, if not proud, then at least merry,
acquiescent. They're, yeah, I mean, they're merry.
You know, they're not bitter.
If you can't be tall, be merry.
It's a weird thing to be bitter about something that is native to you.
And so irrelevant.
Yeah, right.
Or at least should be so.
To be small and bald is to feel like you've been dealt a double whammy, but all
cuz everyone can see the top of your head.
Yeah. All the smaller stature men I know who are bald they're just double merry. they're so merry, and you know, and they won't tell me where they hid their pot of gold, and that's infuriating.
Well, you keep asking, and I'm sure.
I'm like, come on, we've been friends for years.
And they're like, you're still doing that joke.
Where's your pot of gold?
My sister's family is all very short. Both my sister and her husband are wee little people. And as a result, they have four tiny, tiny children, you know, vanishingly, each tinier than the last, like a little Russian Matryoshka doll. And they have a good sense of humor about it.
Yeah.
I think you... I mean, maybe I kind of realized that because they were self-aware about it doesn't mean they want to hear anyone else joke about it.
Right.
You know, that's, I think that's an important recognition.
Right. I mean, you have a very lighthearted take on your Mormonism, but you don't like me joking about it.
Well, you haven't put in the time.
Look, I read 3 or 4 books about it 18 years ago.
That's the thing. People who are like, I had a Mormon friend in the army. I'm going to drop some lingo here and you're going to think it's funny. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I promise I'm not.
I grew late, right? Until I was in 10th grade, I was just very average sized.
That's why you're so merry. You have a small man's personality.
That's right.
Inside a big beefy corpus.
I didn't think that size was going to be any element of who I was. And when I did grow, I wasn't aware of it. I mean, my bones hurt or whatever, but there was a day I was walking with my high school best friend who had always, in junior high and early high school, had always bullied me in a friendly way, in a merry way. But, you know, we would wrestle and he would pin me and we would, you know, shadow box and he would really punch me. And we were walking down the street together.
You know, nowadays you guys could say how you really felt about each other.
And we really,
wouldn't have to do all that stuff.
And he would take my underwear off. But we were walking down the street and I looked over at a shop window at our reflections. And I was looking over the top of his head. This is in 11th grade.
You look like the cover of a Simon and Garfunkel
record. And I grew a foot in a year. And I looked over and I was like, oh my God, look how small you are. And he like got his face all clenched up and he was like, I know, you don't have to. And he's a regular sized person. It was just that I had become,
you're the problem,
this weird thing. And I didn't know it. And somehow I never internalized that I was big until many years later, until like late in my 20s, I realized, oh, part of the reason the world feels like it does is that I'm large. I'm not even that large.
How does the world feel like it does? Like you feel ungainly in it, or you feel like it's your oyster?
Well, I never have an issue in crowds, not knowing where I am, right? In any crowd, I can always see all the way to the end of the crowd. And that's a huge difference, I think. It just makes a big difference.
It's a tactical difference.
Yeah, well, it's just a feeling of, it just
is. That comes into play in today's show.
I feel like a lot of people, when they're in a crowd, they don't know the extent of it, right? They can't see to the ends and they feel, I don't think they feel necessarily claustrophobic. It's the only thing they know. But being able to see always to the exits or to the edge is
see assassins coming in.
You can always see the assassins. You can always make your way to the corner. The disadvantage, of course, is on an airplane. It's not anything that is made, that's mass produced for humans is made for the mean, not for the edge. So nothing fits. Nothing fits.
And it does, unfortunately, have an impact on, this is perhaps more for men than for women, but at least in America, it still has an impact on outcomes like success and income. Only 3% of Fortune 500 CEOs are 5'7 or shorter. Like fully 97% of CEOs have to be 5'8 or for some reason, the universe rejects you.
It feels like a Malcolm Gladwell question where if computers could pick CEOs, they would do an infinitely better job based on like 3 metrics.
You wouldn't pick, yeah, if you were programming this, you would not put height in your top 100.
Right. But you sit and you interview 5 people and they all come in and then the tall one comes in and you're like, ooh, look at that.
Look at his chin.
Well, my goodness.
I mean, it certainly explains the abundance of mediocre leaders making bad decisions, right? They are just 6'2" guys with good hair and a good short game on the golf course.
We were talking about it earlier. You know, neither of us are in corporate America, but we both have our places where we're proximate to it.
Yeah.
And I was just discussing a CEO that I know who is handsome and his shirts fit. And he is a callow and uninsightful person. And the combination of like, oh, he really looks like a CEO. And he's also terrible. Not terrible. He's just not who, right. Of the 7 people that are standing in the room, he's the last one that it has a strategic sense, is good at
interesting idea about anything,
CEOing, but he looks like the CEO, he talks like the CEO, and so he's the CEO. And it, you know, and it offends me at a at like a profound level, because I know a woman who would be a better CEO who not only isn't the CEO but isn't in contention.
Look how big-hearted you are as a tall white man willing to forego your privilege.
Well, the thing is, I would be the best CEO of that company. But I'm not. But it wouldn't be because of my tallness. It's because of my strategery.
The maybe this will all go away in a world where we are all just little Zoom avatars in our virtual meetings. You know, we can all have the square heads and the silver locks of a CEO.
I was on a Zoom poker game the other day, and one of the people had their Zoom background was that foreshortening of focus. You know how it's like a, what would you call it? The background was out of focus.
It was blurry, like a portrait mode in an
iPhone.
Like
portrait mode, that's exactly right. But that was their Zoom background, and I immediately wanted them to win. It just seemed like they were more important because they had
because of their aesthetic.
Yeah, because their Zoom picture looked like they were being photographed by Diane Arbus.
I did make a note the other day of rock bands that have an extremely tall member.
Go on.
Well, I mean, you would know some firsthand.
Yeah.
Who are the tallest people in rock? You know firsthand.
Well, Harvey Danger's lead singer Sean Nelson is 6'5".
Yeah, if you count the hair.
Oh no, he's 6'9" then. Let's see. The National.
There's another big one. Singer? There's another big one in Seattle.
Let's see. Another. Oh, right. Of course. Chris Novoselic.
Yeah. Nirvana had tall. How tall is that guy? 6'7"?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Duff McKagan's pretty tall. But no, there's always the one like weird tall person. That's one of the options if your band is going to be anything other than 5'9" white dudes. You're going to have cute girl, you're going to have black bass player, you're going to have unusual tall guy.
Tom York is 5'5". However,
those guys are all small except for the guitar player.
Yeah, Ed O'Brien, yeah. Is that right? He is 6'4", I think. Yeah, he's a foot taller than
the other guitar player, yeah. And then the rest of them are all small.
Thurston Moore, I believe, is very tall. Is that true?
Yes, and also
Thurston Moore 6'6". Jeez.
What is the Nels Klein is tall.
Yes. Did I have that? Did I have Wilco on my list? I did not. E Street Band. Who's extremely tall? Clarence Clemens was probably, right?
Yeah, big in every dimension.
Clarence Clemens height. Yeah, 6'5".
So the E Street Clemens was 6'5". Wow.
There's somebody very tall in Cardigans in Boston. Who's tall in Fleetwood Mac? It must be.
Oh, it's Mick Fleetwood. It's very tall.
Oh, he is. Mick Fleetwood is 6'5".
And yeah, the guy in Boston, the main guy, Tom Scholz.
This tall. Does seem like there's a CEO effect in, if nothing else, in classic rock, where you want to have some tall, imposing guy on stage, even if maybe he wasn't the best in the audition.
Well, but you'll notice that it's never the lead singer.
It's not the frontman. That's true.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be weird. I guess Sonic Youth is the case where it was. Slipknot, yeah. I guess I can picture that guy.
Well, I want to hear the rest of the list.
Well, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. If you look at pictures of them, there's like one guy that won't even. You know, there's just tall. Drink of water. You know, they're you know, African American teens when that band started. They were literally teenagers from I want to say Philadelphia. And there is one guy who's clearly on the school basketball team and is just a foot taller than the rest of them. And I didn't even notice till I watched footage of them on, I think maybe still photos kind of try to conceal it. But if you watch them on Ed Sullivan or something, like you can tell he's a foot tall. Oh, they're from Washington Heights.
Oh, there. Joey Ramone was 6'6".
The Ramones are on my list. Marillion. I guess I can't picture Arcade Fire. That might be.
Yeah, the guy is tall in Arcade Fire.
Oh, wait, is that right? He's 7'1"?
Who? The guy from Arcade Fire?
Yeah.
No.
Wynn Butler height. Oh, no, that's not right. 6'4". Why does it say he's 7'1"?
Apparently Buckethead is 6'6", and that's even before the bucket. Oh, right. John Phillips from the Mamas and the Papas was always famously tall.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. You know, you see those Mamas and Papas pictures and he's like Mick Fleetwood. He's kind of gangly, scarecrow of a dude.
One of the Wailers.
Also a bad actor. Snoop Dogg, 6'4". Josh Homme from the, or Homme from the Queens of the Stone Age. He was always, he's just slightly taller than me, but he's really a brick wall of a dude. And Zach Wilde too. These are like the heavy rock dudes that are Rick Ocasek.
How tall is Rick Ocasek?
6'4". Well, I mean, they're all about the same.
Not anymore.
Roger Waters, he's the same height as me. They're all like tall, but not, you wouldn't think Brian May was 6'2", but he was.
It does seem like there is some CEO effect here where, you know, rock stars have to be bigger than life in both ways.
But, you know, the opposite is true of movie stars, right?
They're all.
You want a big head and a small body.
Because on the screen, you can't tell that Stallone is 5'6" or whatever. You just assume he's a normal guy with an even bigger magnetic head and big eyes and big expressions.
Right.
Did you know he still has the turtles from Rocky? I saw a picture from the other day. He's posed with the turtles from Rocky. They're in their 40s.
The turtles.
Yeah.
The turtles will outlive him probably, right? Don't they live to be 100 years old?
Yeah, they'd be in their mid-40s.
I'm often watching a film and I'm watching a leading man interact with his leading lady, and I assume, even looking at them standing face-to-face, nose-to-nose, I picture him being tall. And her being small.
He's being projected on a big screen, I guess.
But it always comes as a shock when I see actors eye to eye. I always think somebody's got to be standing on a box. But in fact, it's usually that they're the same height.
Or the guy is standing on a box.
Right.
It must really limit the casting of the Mission Impossible movies. You know, that Rebecca Ferguson is 5'5". Nobody taller than him will get taller than her will get the job.
There's that actress who's been making a lot of films lately who's really tall, and there's no concealing it. She was in Inception.
Oh, yeah. She plays Princess Diana in the new... She's not in Inception. She's in Tenet.
Tenet. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Elizabeth Debicki. She's Australian.
Yeah. She's just like...
She's literally 6'4".
Yeah.
No, that can't be. 6'3".
She's very tall, and...
she's playing Princess Diana, and...
Princess Diana was not that
tall. No. And Dominic West is playing Prince Charles, and he's only... he's 6 foot, but there's going to have to be some camera angles there, you know?
Yeah.
Because Charles is tall and gangly, taller than Diana. So, you know, you talked about the tactical advantage. So clearly there's some prestige that comes with height, even in our day when we would think, no, we're past such caveman concerns.
I do. I mean, well, you interact with me. You are a classic medium, and I am a general extra large.
Yeah, you're 4 inches taller than me or something.
Do you think that plays any role in our interactions? Does my height...
It's hard to say, because you're also a big personality, you know? You're not shy in retiring, but that might come with your height, I don't know.
But does that play any role? It doesn't keep you from stepping on my toes at every opportunity.
This is an audio-only medium. This is a level playing field. Should we do the streaming video cast of the show, but we have to do it standing up, so my ideas look small and shrimpy?
No, we'll just stand you on a box.
We'll do that at the end when we kiss, at the end of every show. But you mentioned the tactical advantage that comes with being tall, and that's something that's existed for some time. There's a history in warfare of wanting soldiers who are not just ripped, probably because that didn't exist at the time.
Strong like bull.
But tall as well.
Charlemagne was tall, although he was like thought of as gigantic, and in fact, turns out he was 6'1".
At the time, he was the tallest man in Europe. Yeah. Nero had his phalanx of Alexander the Great, which was just a bunch of Italian guys who were all the equivalent of 6 foot or higher. So that would have been extremely tall at the time. And so did Bonaparte, your favorite.
Right.
He had his tall guy regiment. But
chosen just for being tall as a way of intimidating, or because they actually had a greater reach, or what? I mean, why would you? I mean, I can see why you would want your bodyguards to be tall, but is there actually a tactical advantage?
I think there is there at least was claimed one, you know, like loading a muzzle loader, maybe the longer arms of a taller man, for example, would help. But really, I think, the real purpose for this becomes clear in the case of the Potsdam Giants. That was not their official name. They were called the Grand Grenadiers of the Prussian Army, or the Lange Kurla,
Lange Kurla.
Long guy, long kids.
Mm-hmm.
But this was Frederick William the First, Frederick the Great's father's kind of elite corps. They were grenadiers. And what I didn't know about grenadiers, which I assume you do know about grenadiers, is that grenadier started out as a term for somebody who was going to throw a grenade. But because that, at the time, the grenade was an unreliable instrument, you know, today, any,
not like now,
not like, well, and today all infantrymen, you know, there's not a special group of guys who throw grenades and the rest are like, hey, we need a grenade here. Get one of those grenade throwing Joes.
To the front, grenadier.
But back then that was an extremely elite job because the grenades were such terrible instruments that it required, you know, your bravest soldiers to be willing to handle and throw them.
My grandfather taught grenade throwing in World War I. It was one of
unfortunately to the Kaiser's men.
One of his jobs. Well, unfortunately, he was blown up by a grenade.
No, wait, is that true?
No. Oh, okay. He survived the war, but otherwise, where would I be?
I guess that, well, he could have had progeny before he held on to a pin.
If my father had been born in 1915, I think I would be.
Oh, you said grandfather.
Yeah, grandfather, not great grandfather.
I was thinking great grandfather.
But yeah, that was. I mean. As late as World War I, it was, still in the Army, there's probably someone who teaches you to throw the grenade.
Right? I mean, like, when I threw out that first pitch for the Mariners the other night, I spent a week practicing because, I mean, I didn't even have, there's nothing humble about it.
That's true of all your brags.
There's no.
They're never humble.
There was nobody was going to, I wasn't going to die if that pitch was high or outside, whereas grenades are literally a matter of life and death.
Right. Get it in the window. Get that grenade in the window.
Get it in the top of the tank, like in a Sergeant Rock comic book. But because of that, you know, by the time grenadiers have been a thing since the 16th century, but by the time they became a kind of a standard unit of a 17th century army, they had really just become kind of an elite all-purpose corps. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the best soldiers, they're grenadiers. Mm-hmm. And they did not actually have grenade-centric duties. Uh-huh. And in the case of Frederick William I, who was the King of Prussia from 1713 to 1740, he liked his grenadiers tall. Uh-huh. He famously said once, to me, the most beautiful girl or woman in the world is a matter of indifference, but tall soldiers, they are my weakness. My weakness. He might have said. So today, you know, that he too could have been freer in his affections, I think, for a certain tall soldier, and he wouldn't have had to be impressed by girls or women.
I mean, it's indicative of how much an army is sometimes the lover of a king, even more so than his queen.
He can, maybe the queen is one of the few people he can't order around as freely as his army, right?
Right.
And Frederick William I was, you know, accounts differ, but he was somewhere between 5'3 and 5 foot tall.
Oh.
So he was a small man, perhaps with a short man's typical sensitivity.
Small man on a gilded box.
But in his case, it manifested itself as admiration toward the tall men in his army. He was called the Soldier King because he loved battle. The funny thing is Prussia fought almost no wars during his, 27 years on the throne.
Mm-hmm.
Brief intervention in the Great Northern War because he decided maybe Peter would give him a nice part of Swedish Pomerania or something if the war went well. But except for that, kind of a, you know, and that's like, that's like Argentina flying six guys into Kuwait or something, you know, apart from helping out a little with Peter the Great's Great Northern War, there was no actual military, but he did strengthen the military. You know, he created this big conscription service, so he swelled the size of the Prussian army. He increased the, you know, there are a lot of tactical and technological advantages. Infantry would fire faster under this Prussian army than ever before in history.
One could argue that being a militaristic king who spends a lot of time wearing, army medals and marching around and modernizing his army, who then does not fight in any wars, is actually the most successful version of a militaristic king, right? I mean,
maybe he has a privilege that we don't know about. Maybe if he'd actually had to go to war consistently during his reign, we would know what a terrible military leader he was. He just got to march them around in peacetime, so we have no idea.
Well, exactly. But if you are regarded as a military genius so much that no one wants to engage your army in battle, have you not already won?
It's like mutually assured destruction, but you don't have nukes, so you have to do it with really shiny epaulettes.
You have tall grenadiers, and that keeps the Poles from trying to invade Prussia.
Just really tall shakos on your grenadiers. He also was kind of a great Santini type. You know, his son would go on to be Frederick the Great.
Right.
But Frederick was not interested in his dad's militaristic, the upbringing his dad wanted to give him. And it started very young. You know, he all his gifts is, he had a whole arsenal of weapons and fake weapons as his toys as kids. And I think when he was, is this right? When he was just six, he was given as a birthday gift a regiment of children for him to march around and drill.
Yes.
Isn't that what you would have loved as a six-year-old?
That is exactly what I wanted as a kid. And it's what I want now. If you gave me 40, like 14-year-old boys to march around in uniforms and give orders to, I don't think I would have any, I would never get into any other scrapes.
You could make them work in your backyard and clear brush.
Yeah, and when I came into a cafe or whatever, like four of them would go in first and then they would click their heels. Then I would walk in and there'd be 10 of them out front.
But demographically, the nation cannot provide every person our age with, what do you want, 20, 14-year-old boys?
Who says every? The whole point of it would be that I was the only one that had it.
That doesn't seem fair.
What, every single middle-aged guy is walking around with 20 boy soldiers?
Well, what have you done to merit it? Why you?
What have I done to merit it?
You just think you would enjoy it more than most people.
I have four podcasts.
I guess if you enjoy it more than most people, there is a utilitarian good into giving those foot soldiers to you.
Yeah, this is one of the things I wonder about billionaires. Like, there are so many billionaires now, and they have so little imagination. They don't dress with any flair. They don't do anything cool.
They go to space.
Some of them. But, like, if I was Richard Branson, instead of surrounding myself with beautiful stewardesses, wouldn't I outfit a little mini army of first of all, what you want to do is you want to design military uniforms that are in pink and yellow so they really stand out. Like, this whole green and black thing, so boring. Pink and yellow military uniforms.
The kids will hate it.
Well, you know, I feel like the cops should wear pink and yellow, and they would hate it too, but it would tame them a little bit, and it would make them more visible in the streets.
And you want to tame your little cadet corps here?
Not, I think that's a little problematic, but no, I want them to stand out when we walk in.
Problematic for 10 minutes.
I suppose so. I mean, you know, it's part of their education, right? Then they go on to a good university. It's not like I'm going to be fondling them. I want them to.
You
want to
give them scholarships.
Yeah, I want to give them scholarships. I want to teach them how to, you know, drill team is a very important part of a young person's education.
You want to teach them how to chop firewood.
Actually, and I don't, and they don't even all have to be boys. I think it should be a plethora of genders in my little honor guard.
Only listeners will know whether this is more or less problematic. 14-year-old boys and girls. Got
if
it.
If I were a billionaire, I would just spend that money on a little bit more interesting, like, accoutrement.
The funny thing is, the future Frederick the Great hated this. He hated having this overbearing dad
who gave him a little mini army
marching him around, you know, as a lot of kids would, because he was a lover, not a fighter. You know, he had the soul of a poet.
I suppose the key element in this story is that he was also a boy and I am not a boy, so it would be different for him to have a little army of boy soldiers.
Lincoln
because
did this,
he was
right?
A boy.
Didn't Lincoln let his son go to War Department meetings and they all had to give him little ponies to ride around and call him Major or something?
My dad took me to meetings of the Alaska Railroad, like, executive committee, and I listened to them talk about locomotives, but they didn't give me any authority.
That just seems boring. That would be me sitting coloring with a legal pad hoping my dad's meeting ended soon.
That's what happened.
In this case, Frederick the Great, the future Frederick the Great, currently Frederick the Small, just hated it, actually tried to escape to England at one point. His dad found out and executed the tutor that had tried to help him. Troubled father-son relationship, because even though Frederick Wilhelm I was a, you know, never really fought a war, he was an extremely military-minded dad. You know, he never fought a war, but he had an F-150 all jacked up with a Punisher skull on
Army
on the hood. Yeah, exactly. And mindful of these historical precedents, Nero and Napoleon and so forth, having a troop of really tall men, he decided he wanted to have history's best troop of the tallest men possible.
This is Frederick the Great?
No.
This is his father.
This is his dad. Frederick the Great is still a small boy plotting escape to...
This would be pre-Napoleon.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's 100 years pre-Napoleon. You're right.
Yeah.
In fact, the Potsdam Giants did go on to last until the time of Napoleon. But you're right. This is... Nero would have been the predecessor. So he instituted a corps called the Grand Grenadiers, where you had to be 6'2" or taller.
I'm in!
Which was... You just made it. But you would not be one of the more elite members because they were paid... They were paid very well. They got the best... stipend and the best food and the best everything available in the Prussian army. However, they were paid according to height.
Oh.
So the taller you were...
So you had to be 6'2", but there was no top limit.
You would be the put upon latrine cleaning corporal.
Hardly.
You'd be the shortest guy there, and that's just how it worked.
No, I have that CEO visionary mane.
They didn't have that. He put them all in 18-inch caps, so they would look
even taller,
you know, upwards of 7 feet. And again, they didn't really have any important duties. He didn't, you know, even though on paper, oh man, these longer arms and a better vision will really help. But really what he wanted them to do is maybe just march around a lot in their nice looking uniforms.
Do you remember when American basketball teams started to source super tall people from around the world, but with basketball experience?
Yeah.
But that ended up working out for them, right? I mean, wasn't it true that at a certain point, just being tall made you good at basketball?
Yeah, it turned out, you know, if you practice with these guys enough, you can turn Manute Bol or some tall Romanian kid into a passable player. You know, just teach him how to catch the ball in the post, and then... It really doesn't matter if they
place it into the hoop. That's the end goal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you would see them just kind of like barely leave their feet because none of these guys can jump and just kind of set it like it's the most polite dunk you've ever seen.
And warfare was different at the time. You didn't have to. A soldier wouldn't have to like crawl through the mud and you know sneak up into a tree or whatever. Everybody, you know, soldiering was just like stand in place. Point your rifle with these other guys.
I mean, a typical troop of grenadiers actually would have, you know, some siege warfare or trench warfare responsibilities.
It wouldn't even be a rifle
insofar as it existed. Yeah.
It's pre-rifle.
Oh,
so
exactly.
It would have been musket.
It's
right?
A musket, yeah. But again, he didn't care. Like what he mostly wanted was for them to march around the house, march around the palace, followed by a bunch of Moorish men in big turbans playing cymbals and trumpets. Followed by a tame bear.
This sounds like the movie Time Bandits.
It cheered him up.
Uh-huh.
Like much as you and I are cheered up to watch Time Bandits,
uh-huh.
He would be having a rough day in the palace because his emo son is yelling at him again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would be like, let's see the trumpet, the tall guys, then the trumpet guys, then the, oh, it's like Ian Holm as Napoleon.
Yeah. It's like the living room of J.F. Sebastian, where he's got all the little Prussian soldiers. Of course, they're all very, very small, but that's what you'd have to do if you lived in an apartment.
Well, back then you did have those like doll-like automata, like rich people would also have little robots like J.F. Sebastian.
But this is exactly what I'm talking about. If you were a billionaire today, why wouldn't you have an army of tall, very nattily and well-appointed, 18-inch tall hat-wearing soldiers marching around with a bunch of... turbaned courtiers followed by a trained bear.
Well, it would be problematic to have all the turbaned guys, I think, today.
Yeah.
You could have...
I mean, everything's problematic, but...
But I would say in this case, especially so, if you're a billionaire who wants to see 100 people of color play trumpets for you.
But look, it's not a thing that you do, like, before a press conference. This is just what you're doing at home on
your aircraft carrier. This is what you do on your Epstein plane or whatever.
Yeah, you hold auditions. It's not a thing. You haven't captured anybody.
If the pay really was a sliding scale based on height, his highest paid officer would have been, according to Scandinavian legend, the Finnish giant Daniel Kajanus. At 7'8", the tallest man known in Europe at the time. Can you imagine?
7'8".
I mean, 7'8" would make him the tallest person in the NBA ever.
Is that right? There's never been a basketball player taller than 7'8"?
I think...
At a certain point, your bones start to break down,
I think,
right?
They usually list the two tallest at 7'7".
Wow.
But, you know, according to legend, Kajanus joined this Prussian corps, although I don't know if there's actually any records to prove this. The problem is, how do you get these guys? If you want a couple thousand 6 foot something guys marching around with a bear, how do you get them? You know, some were just volunteers from the, around, you know, sure. Word gets out. So you hire tall people.
They stand out in their villages.
They might've already been in the army and they could be transferred to this particular unit. That's easy. Some of them were recruits or deserters from other armies. You know, word would go out around Europe that you would get treated and paid better. A tall soldier would get treated or paid better fighting for the Prussians. And back then, you know, nationality didn't matter. You could just switch sides whenever. In some cases, these were gifts given from Frederick Wilhelm's allies.
Oh, yes.
You'd go, well, I know what you're into.
Would you like a tall soldier, my friend?
The most famous case is Peter the Great received from German craftsmen the famous amber room of, maybe you've heard of it, just this crazy mm-hmm. gilded chamber that was in the palace in St. Petersburg for many years until it disappeared during World War II. I think there's a replica of it on display now.
You know, Peter the Great was 6'8".
Also tall, yes.
But he couldn't. He had another job. He couldn't become one of the Prussian.
But Peter the Great seems like Potsdam a case guards. Where, you know, he doesn't just seem like a tall yo-yo put in charge. He modernized Russia.
It's right there in the name, the Great. He's not Peter the Tall or Peter the Dumb.
I wonder if there's, clearly there's the kind of feedback loop that comes with somebody who's just treated like they're good and special and has good ideas their whole life. Some of them turn out to be terrible and end up murdering sex workers or whatever. But some of them actually turn out to be self-fulfilling prophecies.
Yeah,
where they are
like
they are strong personalities with good ideas.
Yeah, standard deviation suggests that if you put enough tall people in CEO positions, once in a while you're going to get lucky.
I'm just saying actually treating them as if they are CEO-worthy people will make some of them rise to the challenge.
Oh, probably. I mean, the human beings aren't that different from one another.
Right.
And so, yeah, you throw enough Peters at a wall, one of them's going to be the Great.
So Peter sent some of his soldiers that were shorter than him, but still taller than the mean, to Germany in return for a very nice amber room.
The amber room is a result of a tall soldier trade?
Yeah, and an amber room to be named later.
Oh my goodness, the amber room.
That could be an omnibus
entry. It certainly should be.
Especially because of its strange fate. But this did not swell the ranks of the Potsdam Giants as much as Frederick Wilhelm hoped, which means he had to resort to other means.
Genetic manipulation.
Well, that comes up later. His agents scoured the countryside trying to find strapping-looking village sons or farmhands. And then, exactly. They would just negotiate with parents and or farmers to essentially buy these people from them. And money being scarce and times being what they are.
Tall boys being hard to feed.
Exactly. I guess that's true.
Yeah.
People would maybe be happy to take a good price for them. One history of the time says that these agents were, in the eyes of the people, eager almost as the Jesuit hounds are. You know, the Jesuits going around trying to save souls.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's ambassadors of the crown going around looking for who's the tallest guy in the public house.
Well, now you've been into 16th and 17th century half-timbered homes. You know they have low ceilings.
You're bonking your head all the time.
Yeah, I would think if you were a tall person living in these cramped quarters, your parents' small house.
You think you would want to get out just for roomier accommodations?
Yeah, get me to the palace where I don't bump my head.
Maybe my feet won't hang over the edge of the bed once I'm in the barracks.
This still is a problem traveling in Europe.
For you.
Yeah, you get a hotel room and your feet are hanging off the edge, or worse, they have those footboards. Like, why does a bed have to have a footboard? It's not a cradle.
And it's not usually the same height as the bed, right? Isn't it lower than the bed?
But what it does is it keeps you from being able to lay on the bed if you are taller than 5'7".
This is a tangent, but I am just maddened by Europe's refusal to put wide beds in hotels and to put sheets on the beds. You either get a duvet that's too hot or nothing, because there's no sheets on the beds anymore.
So last night it occurred to me, I'd always wanted to live in Trieste, and I was sitting kind of staring out the window of my house, and I was like, well, why don't I live in Trieste? It's one of those things where you say, Yeah. Well, you know, why postpone your dreams?
Are you waiting for someone to come and say, John, I just bought you a house in Trieste?
No, I've always been waiting, you know, to stand on a train platform and there's a beautiful woman across the way. And I go, where are you going? And she goes, Trieste. And then I say, I'll see you there October 1st, 2002. But so I went on and I started researching real estate in the Trieste region. The region around Trieste, which is not called the Trieste region.
This is a pretty normal 3 a.m. for you, just looking at apartments in Trieste.
Well, you know, you can buy a pretty nice house in the mountains up there outside of, you know, in the sort of, you know, the Umbria region. Pretty, you can get a Gast house because it's this great. It's Slovenia's right there. You got Austria. You got Venice is there.
The number one thing I look for in a real estate listing is where is Slovenia?
How far is Slovenia from here? I couldn't agree more. And I was looking at some of these properties and I saw one that actually had a real king size bed, not two twin size beds pushed together.
Yeah. Two like very narrow twin size beds.
No. Together. An actual, somehow they had sourced a real king size bed. And I thought that they stopped king size beds at the border in Europe.
They must have smuggled it in through Constantinople.
Yeah. It came across the sea because it was the only one I've ever seen. And I rejoiced. I was like, this maybe is a sign. Maybe this is my house in Umbria. But then I started Googling something.
And they will
else.
List them as king size beds to fool unwary Americans.
Yeah. And then you get there and you pull the sheets back and you're like, this is just two twin beds.
They just pushed the narrowest beds they had together. Ugh. And they kind of made a queen.
How do they? They're tall people in Europe. How do they live?
Europe actually had kings and queens and they can't, to this day, they can't tell the difference.
Thank you. We don't even have kings and queens. We just have their beds.
We have California kings.
Yeah. Elon Musk.
In order to, right. In addition to, they would also get them younger. In addition to sons and farmhands, if people gave birth to unusually long babies, newborn boys in Frederick Wilhelm's Prussia would have little red scarves tied to their cradles to mark them for visiting dignitaries so they knew who to keep an eye out for in the village.
If they were long babies.
Yes, a promising long baby.
Huh.
Because... You know what happens when you see a baby. You're sure, like, is this baby long enough to be president?
That baby is long. How did you get that long baby?
Could that baby be a grenadier someday? He does seem long.
There was a baby when my daughter was a baby. There was we knew another baby that was such a long baby. And I saw a picture of him today as an 11-year-old, and he's a long boy. So maybe there is a correlation between long baby and long boy.
I don't think that's flawless.
Yeah, no, I think
you're
right.
Always work.
Some long babies become regular boys.
But the methods of keeping his ranks full of tall men become increasingly troubling after that point. I mean, you know, maybe buying farmers taller help away from them is weird enough, but they were not above press ganging.
Sure.
People, they would...
But they were doing that anyway.
It's true. But in this case, it's especially troubling because they could, you know, pick somebody out of a crowd... There's the case of a famous case of a 7'11". That can't be right. A 7'11" Irishman named James Kirkland, who was hired as a footman by the Prussian ambassador to London, but it was only a ruse. The Prussian ambassador had been sent over just for the purpose of pretending to hire this guy so they could then say, hey, could you go on board that ship and get my stuff? And as soon as he went on board the ship... he got coshed in the back of the head. Somebody stood on a chair and knocked him out. And
could you climb into this very large barrel and hold the top of this barrel for me?
Well, you're joking, but the English historian Thomas Carlyle tells a story about the Potsdam Giants, which, you know, could just be British anti-Teutonic propaganda, but which is exactly that. A very tall man was working as a carpenter in the city of Jülich. And so Frederick's men showed up and said, hey, I need a chest for shipping stuff. It's got to be 6'6" long. The carpenter builds the chest and the guy comes back and says, you built that too small. And he said, no, I didn't. He said, yes, I did. That is not 6'6". And the carpenter said, look, I'm 6'6". I will lie in the chest. And he lies down in the chest and they close the lid and nail it shut and send him on to Potsdam. Unfortunately, they forgot to drill air holes.
You're kidding.
No, and tall people cannot... transpire through their skin. They have a lot of amazing powers. I don't. But
it's one of the things about tall people. They need to breathe.
They need oxygen, it turns out.
I'm surprised
they arrived dead.
They didn't make a little door where they could put bananas and water in there.
Yeah, it must have been I mean, where's Ulick? I mean, maybe it wasn't that far a journey, but he certainly needed air for those hours in transit.
I bet that carpenter was rueing how good his work was.
Tall priests would be persuaded at gunpoint to give up the cassock or whatever it is that priests had. Is
that really persuasion? At a point where you're pointing a gun at somebody, are you persuading
them?
Well,
let me ask you this. Would you say that was persuasive? Because if it was persuasive, then I guess they were persuaded.
I suppose. I feel like persuasion is a word that should have some boundaries.
They should be wheedling them?
I feel like, you know, that's more, I mean, where is the line between persuasion and force?
You got
we talk about that all the time in our culture today.
I hope not. Oh, like
in other realms.
Well, I don't have to.
You and I don't talk about it, but
no.
We're gonna have to just throw this whole episode in the garbage.
It's all you talking about how many 14-year-old boys you want trailing after you when you walk into the malt shop. But that was not the worst thing he did. Press ganging was the least of his offenses. He tried to create taller soldiers by putting soldiers on the rack. And he would apparently just sit and eat his lunch and watch people painfully stretch.
As a person at the lower end of the potential tall soldier demographic,
would you do it for the pay raise?
I object to this very strongly.
You could, if you did it, maybe you would start to get the paycheck of a 6'4" grenadier. It's not worth it.
No, thank you. I think when you get stretched on the rack, I don't think it's a lasting stretch.
And here's the final way he got taller soldiers, or tried to, which is what it's principally remembered for, because Charles Darwin uses it as a test case in The Descent of Man. He started a eugenics program to hopefully breed taller soldiers.
He found tall girls and put them together?
He would find, well, no, that wouldn't work.
Two taller girls. I see what you're saying. No, he found tall girls and he
do I need to explain this to you?
Introduced them to tall boys and tried to see if they liked each other?
That's right. And I don't think there was that much free will involved in the in the dating game.
It wasn't a thing where they were like he had a dance or whatever and they only invited tall people.
He had a long computer dating system for the tallest Prussian women and the tallest Prussian men. No, he instituted a breeding system where tall women were introduced to his tall soldiers.
Good heavens.
And you know, Charles Darwin in The Descent of Man refers to this as the only time that his natural, you know, those kind of evolutionary principles have ever been put into practice with human beings.
The only time?
Which almost certainly shows that Darwin lived a very sheltered life. I mean, we now know some pretty ugly things about, you know, whole breeding farms that were created by Virginia slaveholders, for example.
Right.
You know, chattel slavery here, we think of it as an import for the southern states, but in fact, they would be a valuable export too if you could produce future slaves. So, you know, big income source for the slaveholder and his economy would be to, you know, breed new slaves, which he could then just sell as clear profit, which is just horrifying. But yeah, they, you know.
So wait a minute, you're against slavery?
Just to be clear, okay. This is one of the most repugnant things I can imagine.
Okay, good.
But there were breeding farms set up, and, you know, with all the abundant abuses you would expect, that, you know, the rapes on the part of the white overseers and, you know, choosing partners based on their perceived fitness to produce valuable offspring. They treated exactly as they would somebody today who would be trying to produce a better racehorse or you know, fitter cattle.
Right.
So disgusting. But, you know, Darwin, you know, says, nope, the only time this has ever been attempted was that eccentric king trying to produce taller Prussians. Anyway, so this was just a main aim of his army, was to produce tall men to put 18-inch hats on.
So at this point, he's expanding it beyond just having an honor guard that marches around his palace and is now trying to create a super army of Teutonic warriors?
Yeah, he wants thousands of these men, even though really they never fight. And the taller the better, I think, because that's prestige in his eyes. My army can look over the head of your army. After his death, his son Frederick the Great became Frederick the Great and cared much less about these kind of military matters, as his childhood would suggest. You know, he was still, you know, the Boston Giants, the Grand Grenadiers, did stick together as a unit. I mean, they were eventually downgraded to a battalion, But there were like more wars fought in this period than there ever were during the Soldier King's reign. You know, they would have fought in the War of Austrian Succession, in the Seven Years' War. In fact, they were not disbanded until the 19th century after some decisive Prussian losses to the French during the Napoleonic Wars.
And did they did they have any kind of better results on the battlefield?
No, history is entirely silent as to. I mean, if anything, having effectively served as a honor guard, color guard, army, you know, royal mascot kind of a thing, maybe they were less well drilled or less valiant under fire than the real soldiers would have been.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, since you think your path to success is surrounding yourself with an honor guard of, I mean, you didn't say you wanted tall people to surround you.
No.
In fact, maybe you would prefer them to be short.
I would.
To make you look taller by comparison.
That's
the,
right.
The Chris Novoselic tactic.
Yeah, absolutely. And believe the, I should say that a pink and yellow uniform is also what I would be wearing. I mean, I think pink and yellow are their colors that really befit me.
In my picture of this, they're kind of wearing, you know, short shorts and knee socks like a 1930s era scout corps, whereas you look more like a South American generalissimo. You've got a pink and white, you know, hat with a lot of scrambled eggs on it. And
well, I feel it's more Austro-Hungarian, right? It's not, I don't want to look like a generalissimo. I want to look more like an archduke.
What's the hat?
In a situation like that, I think, you know, I generally am more or less hatless, but maybe a tri-corner hat.
Wow. Well, you know, I guess people will see you coming. If the future perhaps has record of us of a unusual man in a tricorn hat, a pink and yellow uniform and a tricorn hat, followed by a squad of young girls and boys unrolling a pink and yellow carpet for him as he strode into Home Depot.
It would be an unusual look in Seattle, but you know, I'm already tall. And that concludes The Potsdam Giants. Entry 972.1S1704. Certificate number 10109 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, this episode will probably still be talked about and argued about because either you, futurelings, will be very tall and looking back and thinking 6'3", that's nothing, or you'll have reverted back to being some kind of sploochy little fern or ball.
Do you have a prediction here? Like, what's the direction for the human race? I mean, we've been getting taller in the past 100 years just due to less malnutrition of children and maybe more red meat for strapping Dutchmen.
Right, but also with the current heat waves and firestorms and so forth, don't you want to be a smaller creature?
I was just thinking that. I mean, megafauna evolved because things were going great. There was nothing to eat them and lots of stuff for them to eat.
But the only reason that mammals even survived was that they were little rats that could hide in dark holes.
That's exactly right.
So it's the tall ones that are going to have trouble perspiring in the humidosphere of future Americas.
You think you're ready for doomsday, but in fact, you just have too much surface area.
Yeah.
You're going to become banging on the door of my bunker, and I'm going to slide open that little grate and ask how tall people are, mm-hmm. and I can't let anybody in over 6 foot. They're not going
to
survive.
So I imagine futurelings are going to be small, and they're going to be, and they'll probably not photosynthesize, given how choked the atmosphere will be with smog and the smoke of forest fires.
But there will be abundant carbon dioxide for them. They'll love that.
That's true.
They'll love all those greenhouse gases. That'll be like butterscotch pudding to them.
I think we come back to algae and ferns over and over. Pink slime, pink mold. Well, anyway, pink mold of the future. I apologize for everything I said in this episode. If you still have social media, God, I'm so sorry. How did we not eradicate it in our own time? But you can find us at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick, at Omnibus Project, various places. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/omnibusproject, where you can help support the show with your generous contribution and in return get an sort of an unlimited access to Ken and less so to me. But
you can come in my bunker if you're 5'11" or shorter.
5'11" or shorter. You can find me on Patreon at John Roderick. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can hang out with other futurelings, given or hopefully other futurelings that are also small enough to survive the coming apocalypse. Don't hang out with tall futurelings because the bell that tolls for them.
Maybe what you want to do is to be a really tall futureling surrounded by a bunch of little small ones who you can bully into bringing you seeds and nuts.
Oh, yes, right. Everywhere you go, little small futurelings
have to do your bidding.
Yeah, walk into the future, the algae cafe.
The future can support a tiny number of giants with the
kind of like the present.
Exactly. It's a very late stage capitalism.
Was this show a suggestion, or did this spring from your mind?
No, this was the show was suggested by Daniel, a listener who contributed to the Patreon. And if you give at the washing bear level or above, once a year you get to suggest a show topic, a concierge service we provide.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we work with the futurelings to make sure that the shows fit the omnibus ethos. But, of course, they've heard the show and have a pretty good idea. Although somebody the other day did suggest a show we had already done.
Really?
Somebody said, you should do a show about Hikikomori, the young Japanese hermits of Japan. And I said, we have already done a show about Hikikomori, the young Japanese hermits of Japan. But luckily, they had a few other suggestions.
There are a lot of
shows. It's a collaborative process.
They can't possibly have listened to them all. You know, usually when someone suggests a show to me, I end up doing a different show where I tangentially reference the show that they mentioned. But don't let that inhibit you from giving to our Patreon and suggesting shows.
It still counts.
It still counts.
We still talk about your thing.
Yeah. If I mention your thing at any point in the show while I'm talking about the airplanes of the Cold War, then
even if it's just to say, we will not be discussing Hikikomori.
And finally, you can send us actual physical media, including, boy, we get all manner of mail here, and it brings us great joy. It's a delight to open your packages.
It's an old-timey thrill to open physical mail.
Mm-hmm. And to read your postcards. And you can send that stuff to us at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
Listeners, from our vantage point here in the taller, more distant past, we have no idea how long our oversized civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, however, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.